The Nomi Key Show. I am Nomi Key Konst, and today I am coming to you almost from exactly the center of the country in Missouri. Missouri, outside, social distancing, not inside, even with my mask or with others who don't have masks. We are 49 days until the election. I saw a friend and an ally last night in St. Louis, Cori Bush, who is on her way to Congress. Yes, she will be the first Black woman to represent the state of Missouri on Capitol Hill. Progressives are winning. And that is the upbeat news, because there's the rest of the story. I am driving west right now, and it is really important that we get out of our little blue bubbles, if we live in blue bubbles like I do in Astoria, New York, socialist capital of the country. We need to recognize what we are up against and how much of this country lives in a completely different reality, on a completely different set of alternate facts. The night before I stopped, I stopped in a town called Bedford, Pennsylvania for dinner. It was the only sit-down restaurant at the time of that night when we were looking for a restaurant, and it ended up being at a very snazzy resort, a beautiful spot, really. It was stunning. But they had no outdoor seating in Pennsylvania, so we stepped inside to examine. And the dining room was packed, 200 people, eating next to each other like there was no outbreak, like there was no pandemic. And then when I talked to the hostess and said, you know, is there outdoor seating? Is there any possibility we could sit outside? She looked at me like I was crazy. So we turned around and walked out, and then learned about how a fraternity had to be shut down because of an outbreak. And we thought, well, this must have been their parents, also Trump supporters. But where can you hide when you are crossing the country socially distanced in your car? Well, we ended up grabbing snacks from the gas station, and no one was wearing masks in there either. Why aren't people getting it? But are those who recognize facts getting it? That's what I want to know. Are they getting their denial? Are we getting our denial? Are we getting their denial? Do we realize how much there are folks in swing states, in red states across the country who are in denial? We too must feel what is happening out there outside of our bubbles. I feel like we need a new edition of the Green Book. This time, instead of aid to Black travelers, it will be to protect fact-based progressives against the hazards of denial, right-wing propaganda denial all across the country. We may not agree with Biden on many details of where we want to go, but he is getting one big thing right. Donald Trump is in denial. He's in denial about the climate. He's in denial about COVID. He is in denial about the meaning of this country. Fascism is in an order of magnitude worse than neoliberalism. That is a reality we also have to realize. And that is why fighting neoliberalism and Biden is more tangible than fighting fascism, which seeks to annihilate all in its way. I worry our friend Joe Rogan isn't getting this. We both supported Bernie, but now he is going on a dangerous path. He called me out a couple of days ago for an appearance I had on the Majority Report in which I was questioning these alternative facts. I was questioning how platforms, which are corporately owned, do not have any editorial oversight and are essentially monetizing off of people who are pushing conspiracy theories. In this situation, it was a Dave Rubin conspiracy theory, and Joe Rogan was talking about it. But Joe Rogan has also, sometimes he can have great guests on like Bernie Sanders, but sometimes, more often than not, he has people on like Ben Shapiro who are pushing conspiracy theories and not being questioned hard enough. Or Joe Rogan himself, as in the case with his 3-hour-long interview with Elon Musk, questioned the reality of COVID. This is the largest, most popular podcast in the world. He had one of the biggest deals with Spotify ever, a publicly traded company. So he might be a comedian, but he too has a responsibility to live in reality because the consequences are severe. Someone may have appealed to Bernie Sanders through Joe Rogan or Joe Rogan through Bernie Sanders. But my question is, if Joe Rogan is suddenly questioning, supporting, or fighting Donald Trump, where does that lead those folks? Where is Joe Rogan the gateway to? Is it to Bernie Sanders? or is it to Ben Shapiro? People are dying every day because of Donald Trump's fantasy world and Donald Trump's propaganda fantasy world. And more will die if reelected. If Trump judges were supported all across this country. Well, one was confirmed with the help of five corporate Democratic senators who voted them in, who overturned Pennsylvania's rules to curb the COVID virus. We all believe in personal freedom, but those 200 people packed into that restaurant in Bedford, Pennsylvania, aren't just endangering themselves. They are endangering all of us. Climate denial is just like COVID denial. How many people have died out west in wildfires, coming up to 30 so far? And Trump says that the problem is they're not raking leaves. Seriously. It is too late to be debating whether or not their reality should be on TV. We should be debating how and how urgently what the best strategy is to take Donald Trump and his propaganda forces off TV and out of office. You know, I've been thinking a lot about the Green New Deal as we roll west on Interstate 44. Dwight Eisenhower built these amazing highways. They helped make us one country in a way that we were not before. Lots of people said he was crazy or reckless even. They said that the country couldn't afford these highways, and they said that we didn't really need them. But Ike Eisenhower had a spine. He had seen the highways in Germany, how they built them, and he knew that we could do it too, and that we needed to do it to move forward. Imagine our world today without interstate highways. Imagine our supply chain alone, how we'd be able to move all these materials across the country. A green infrastructure program is our interstate highway project, and we have to do it. We will look back and wonder why anybody was against it, hopefully, if we are able to save this world from climate change. But someone with a spine needs to push it through, and that certainly is not Donald Trump, who again thinks the wildfires were spontaneous combustion from unraked leaves. It might be Joe Biden with that spine, or Ed Markey, or AOC, but we have only 49 days until the polls close on November 3rd. If you have any doubts about the difference between a second Trump-Pence administration and a Biden-Harris government, do me a favor and just take a drive across the country and see the, what I've now counted, hundreds of Trump Pence signs and flags on cars, handmade Trump Pence posters, and the 9 Biden signs I have seen on the highway. 4 more years of denial are just too dangerous. And that is why the rest of the week, as we're on the road, we're going to be talking about what it's going to take for Biden and Harris to get their reality that the stakes are too high, and what it is going to take for us to realize our reality, which is as uninteresting and dangerous as neoliberalism is. Fascism is what has rounded up people across this country, has shot Black men down, has sterilized women in ICE concentration camps. That's fascism. Couple of stories that are on my feed today. A whistleblower says that ICE detainees underwent forced hysterectomies. The whistleblower is a nurse employed at the Georgia Detention Center. She filed a complaint detailing, quote, jarring medical neglect and a rate of hysterectomies performed upon immigration detainees for reasons that were unclear or did not make sense to the detainees themselves. Detainees who raised concerns were forced into solitary confinement, and the whistleblower herself received reprimands and a demotion when she questioned these practices. These are human rights abuses, plain and simple, and we know it. A frightening echo of the long history of the United States of research abuses of marginalized groups, including Blacks, Puerto Ricans, and women. Pfizer says it should know by the end of the month of next month if its vaccine is effective against COVID-19 and safe. It must be distributed fairly and of no cost to those who can't afford to pay. We are only as safe as our most vulnerable. This is not just an issue with the United States. It's an issue between the entire first world and everybody else. Astronomers say that they have found a potential sign of life. It came as a surprise because Venus has long been overlooked in the search for life on the universe. Duh. This is no surprise. Aren't women from Venus? No wonder they overlooked it. So we have a great show today. Walker Bragman is here. He has a great story that he has just pushed out. And he's been making news since he's been working with David Sirota at Too Much Information, TMI. That is the newsletter that has gone out after David Sirota left the Bernie Sanders campaign. They're making a lot of news and pushing the Biden campaign and pushing news out there that would not get a platform otherwise. So I'm looking forward to speaking with Walker. And then later, we have Harvey Kay and Thomas Frank, who reunite after 20 years to talk populist politics of the past and the present and what we can learn. But remember, make sure to smash that like button. Make sure to push this show out there. We are about to hit 50,000 subscribers on YouTube, and our patrons, we're about to hit our goal to make sure that we are able to pay our team so that we can go out on the road and I can actually use my camera properly. They trained me on everything. They didn't train me on that, obviously. No, but for real, join us at patreon.com/thenomikishow. It's how we're able to get great guests. It's how we're able to cut things. It's how Dorsey is able to manage the show while I am halfway across the country. Make sure to click like and subscribe and share with everyone on social media. Seriously, that's you know the jam. It's how independent media works. But next up, we have Walker Bragman. Is Walker here yet? Might have to pause till Walker gets in. But next up, we're going to talk about schools protecting themselves legally in case they're sued because of their malpractice when it comes to COVID. That's up next. Live from Missouri, outside, social distancing. I'm very excited to have our good friend, Walker Bragman. He is the co-host of the Gilded Age podcast. He is a contributor to TMI, Too Much Information. That's the great newsletter stack, I guess that's how you call it. Is that right? Dave Sirota launched after the Bernie campaign. Walker just published an article called Colleges and Universities Lobby for Liability Protection as They Reopen. I lost my mind reading this. He did that with Andrew Perez, who is also a great reporter. And the Gilded Age podcast he hosts with Alex Koch and Mark Colangelo, which I have been a guest on. I feel like I'm running for office. You say that when you run for office. It's like, we are going to fight. We live in a house together. We have a movement. I mean, we are a show, but like I was on your show, not like our whole team. Walker, what's up? Fair enough. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I got out of the city this weekend, so I feel pretty good. Sorry, the cat is bugging me.
This is the new age. I'm sitting outside in Missouri, and you're with your cat on your couch. This is how we do it. Yes. What, like, we were made for these moments. The left has been on, just, we're always ahead. We're really ahead on this one.
Yeah, it's like your lifestyle changed. Mine did not.
You're right. I did used to have a studio, and I didn't know how to use things like cameras and tripods, which I clearly failed at just now because my camera collapsed in the middle of my monologue. It was bad enough. I was looking for the duct tape because I was trying to fix something, and I had like looked out at my computer. You're seeing all the behind the scenes right now, guys, because I normally have a little teleprompter thing, and I did not today.
Use a teleprompter?
Everyone uses a teleprompter. Okay, not everybody.
Shame.
Sam doesn't. I don't think TYT does. Some people at TYT do. So here you go.
Corlin, get down. Get down, please. Off. Sorry.
Walker.
So sorry. I'm just like, the cat's like, she's like nuzzling the computer. It's like, okay, please just stop. Like, stop. Whatever you want, you'll get it. Just give me a minute.
It's okay. It's like the third wall has been broken suddenly. Everything's just off limits. All right. Okay, Walker. So let's talk about this article. First off, how did you learn about this?
Well, we go through government databases. That's sort of what we do at TMI and lobbying disclosures and whatnot. And we were looking up like which industries are lobbying for liability protection. There's a lot. A lot of industries.
In light of COVID especially, right? Lobbying.
in light of COVID, trying to reopen and get protection when they do it. But what really stood out to us was that schools were doing it, you know, and these colleges and universities were pushing to get a shield to put their students at risk, their faculty at risk. And that didn't seem right. So
Mitch Daniels, who's the president of Purdue University, suggested that the school should reopen in the fall, right?
Yes.
And
he's been suggesting it for quite some time.
Yeah, he's one of the first. And you know, and there are schools that are opening now, I guess, this week, right? Across the country.
Yep.
Not to mention public schools that we've heard the stories. But you said while Daniels was publicly expressing confidence in Purdue's safety plans, the university was busy lobbying Congress on institutional liability during pandemic response, records show. So what's the angle there?
Well, I mean, it's the put out the good public face. We can do it. We can do it safely, but privately, like, okay, we really have to cover our asses because if shit goes south, we have to. Can I swear on this?
Not the F word.
Not the F word. Okay, that's good. So if things go badly, we are protected. It makes sense from a business standpoint, but in terms of like if I were a parent and I had a kid who was enrolled at Purdue, I would not be too thrilled right now. I wouldn't be thrilled if my child's school were reopening.
So I mean, this is so mind-boggling to me because this is also kind of what Trump, I mean, it's been now with Woodward, Trump has shown that he clearly knew about the pandemic, might have even been worried about it if you could go that far. But despite all that, the public face has been total denial. And as a result, it's bred this culture of denial that it exists, which just reveals to me, at least, that there's a clear financial motivation behind this that seems a little bit like disaster capitalism. And then there are all these other industries like universities who maybe just don't want to lose the money because they're already strapped for cash for whatever reasons, because they don't have, you know, sporting events. I don't know, whatever their models are.
Well, that's the key, is that they're all losing money. I mean, schools have lost millions of dollars from during this pandemic. And they're not the only, you know, enterprise that's suffering. I mean, it's pretty much just a blanket. The entire economy has taken a serious hit. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No. But I'm questioning, like, how are these liability protections going to, I mean, could they even, they're just worried about losing more money or in some case completely protecting themselves through limited liability?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the end game here is even if they make a mistake, I mean, the liability shield, let me take a step back. The liability shield that was passed in New York for healthcare companies and organizations related to patient care, that liability shield basically says unless it is gross negligence or willful misconduct, these nursing homes, healthcare companies, healthcare executives, everybody, they're shielded from, you can't bring a suit against them. So I think that what these, you know, if I were a school trying to reopen, that would sort of be what I would aim for. Like outside of a very narrow set of circumstances, we can't be sued if, say, you get exposed to COVID or you get really sick or have complications.
Got it. Okay.
Despite your precautions.
So tell me about this nonprofit called Building America's Future.
So that is an education linked nonprofit that's been putting out ads to sort of, you know, get people like jazzed about schools reopening. And it's somewhat.
Yay, school.
Yeah. It's yeah. Awesome. Can't wait. Although, you know, like, I don't know. If I were in college right now, it would be difficult, right? Think about it. Yeah. If you were a college student right now, like, it's a weird time of life. And now it's even weirder and more difficult. You're disconnected from your friends. And so, like, I don't know. I feel very sort of, obviously, I think schools should remain closed because of COVID. But I do feel bad for the students because they'll never get this time back. It's unfortunate. This is just where we're at.
I think what's so shocking is just, it seems like these industries, you know, whether it's a right-leaning college or they're thinking about the bottom line, the effects of COVID seem to definitely go past any potential real financial advantages that might come out of some sort of disaster capitalist model, unless you're a Betsy DeVos, for instance, who, you know, has an incentive to shut down public schools. We're talking about not colleges, public schools, K through 12, to privatize them eventually, like she did, you know, in Puerto Rico with the charter program there, where they just shut down like 75% of the schools after the storm and decided to privatize. So, it's just, it seems like the motivations are all financial. It just depends on what side of this you are at this point. Like, if you're going to lose more money as a result of COVID.
Right. I mean, a lot of smaller schools are really struggling to, you know, survive this, and there will be, I'm sure there will be closures. I'm sure colleges will be going under. It's just an unfortunate, if we don't reopen, I'm sure a lot of businesses will, because really I think the discussion around reopening the country is really just a discussion about what government will and will not do for
right.
the American people.
And, that's right.
I think we sort of get distracted from that. Like, oh, well, why won't you allow us to reopen? No, that's not the question you should be asking. The question is, why isn't the government doing more to keep businesses and people afloat
during
a time when we should all be shut down? I mean, we just discovered that there is maybe some treatment, a steroid treatment for COVID. They found to be a little effective, but really there's no vaccine for this. It's very widespread. We're heading into the fall. We're heading into the fall. Like, we're heading into normal flu season. So
everyone's going inside.
I don't know. Yeah. I think that progressive politicians like Bernie Sanders have, you know, who are suggesting that we have a $2,000 a month basic income. I think that is a good idea.
Well, the basic income, but also just the protection. I mean, not more loans, but more protections for small businesses, not just big businesses, not just donors to Trump, not just, you know, the monopolies out there. So that even the private institutions, so kids who are in school right now, even if eventually they have to cut back, these kids can go to school in some way, and there's protections, and the burden's not put on the individual. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous reading these stories and seeing that Ivy Leagues have cut their tuitions by like $1,000 because of the student life. It's like, oh, well, we're cutting out the student life fees because people aren't there in person. Well, it's just $60,000 a year for a lot of these schools. And, you know, are people going to be able to qualify for loans to even go to school? So they're going to have a reduction across the board. And my guess, hopefully, is that government's going to be forced to step up, and maybe we'll see a more funding go towards public institutions and maybe free college even. Because what are we going to do without? Yeah.
These Ivies, a lot of these Ivies have huge endowments.
Right.
So I think they'll be okay. I think they could weather, they'll be able to weather this. They'll be able to do online classes and whatnot. The big danger right now, the most immediate danger obviously is the virus. Like, what happens when schools across the country reopen and we start seeing waves, as we have, of new COVID infections? Like, what happens then? I think the decision to reopen is basically a decision that says some people are expendable in this economy. And, you know, we're gonna let them get sick, kind of cull the herd, and then eventually we'll have herd immunity. And that is a terrible, terrible, immoral position to have.
It's immoral and it also doesn't work. I mean, they tried that in Scandinavia and it proved to be completely false and a horrible mistake. But that's also ultimately, I mean, going back to your point about the COVID liability protections, that is sort of the insurance mindset, right? Some people are just expendable.
For Walker, profit, baby.
Go check out Walker's article, TMI. How do people find it outside of the stack? I get very confused by these things. I just get the email and I'm like, can you explain how so, the knowledge works to me?
Well, we do, we also partner with Jacobin Magazine. And we have a number of other partners that we can co-publish with. But yeah, we put it out on Substack. It usually goes out in Jacobin as well. And then maybe the American Prospect or maybe the Guardian, depending.
Awesome. Great partners. Keep up the amazing work. Great, I mean, really Thanks, interesting no article. Glad you're doing this work. All right. Take care, Walker. Up next, it's taken 20 years in the making for the great Harvey Kay and the great Thomas Frank. You can decide who's greater to join the show. We're going to talk about populism in America in the past in a populist state of Missouri. I couldn't have planned this better, could I? That is up next on Nomi Keisha, but make sure to click like and subscribe and share in social media. Live from the road in Missouri. I am so excited to be in a populist state talking to two great populist thinkers, writers. We have Thomas Frank coming back for his third time on the show, author of The People Know, A Brief History of Anti-Populism. And of course, Harvey Kay, professor at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He's an author, expert on FDR and Thomas Paine. And you guys are reunited after 20 years.
That's right.
Is there anything you'd like to say to each other that is not
said? You look good, Thomas. You look good.
So Harvey, I'm a little concerned. I remember leaving a book of matches in your house, and I'm wondering if you could return it to me.
A book of matches, of all things.
No, that's a joke. That's my effort at humor, Nomi.
Okay, I got a better.
Book. Hey, look at that! Oh. Look at that! There you go. So Nomi, I was born in the state of Missouri. The hospital I was born in doesn't exist any longer. It's now the site where the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City is, but that's where I was born.
That's amazing. I did not go by Kansas City. We went to St. Louis last night. We saw Cori Bush at her beautiful office. She's built this amazing studio there. She's what I love about Cori is, like, even though she's the busiest person in the world right now, she still has time for her old friends. And I think that marks a great leader.
Did she take you out to the McCloskey's house?
No, but we talked about it. The McCloskey's being those two crazy people who feature the RNC. I mean, she has security as a result. I don't know if it's because of that or just because she, you know, she's, you know, it's dangerous. I mean, it's very dangerous when the right wing goes after you. As I'm sure all of us have experienced in some way and form, it can be very dangerous. You get lots of types of threats. And that's what happens when you have right-wing propaganda out there. So anyways, all right, where are we going to start, guys? I have a couple questions just off the top of my head, driving across the country and seeing things like, you know, the interstate highway and realizing, oh, this is what happens when you have leaders who you may not agree with, but can actually build something great. And you know, maybe people ask at the time, can we pay for it? Do we need the interstate highway? But what would the world be like today? What would capitalism be like today if we didn't have the interstate highway? And how can we hopefully, if Biden is president, make something as great as that or better, like solving climate change, put that on the table? I'm going to go to Thomas first. And I think talk over each other.
I've got a way of answering that'll set Harvey up real quickly. So when you drove out there, you probably, well, let's talk. You went by the St. Louis Arch, which is also an amazing sort of achievement. I don't know if you've ever gone up in it, but built by workers who were members of something called a union. They used to have these in America. It was this amazing thing. It meant that they got paid well and they had health care and all this sort of thing. Another thing, I guess you stopped before you got to Kansas City, but in Kansas City, a lot of the downtown buildings and some of the tallest skyscrapers were built by a group called the Public Works, PWA it was called. And the elementary school that I went to was built by the WPA. Kansas City was a more important city in the 1930s than it was today. But our government at the time and up into the Eisenhower years when they started on the interstate system, that was absolutely committed to putting unemployed people to work building infrastructure. This was a non-controversial thing at the time. And we did some amazing things as a country. Now, the interstate highway system was the biggest public, I think probably the biggest public works program ever of any country on earth. But I would defer to Harvey's judgment on that.
Yeah. You know, first of all, as long as you hand it over, the interstate highway system was first envisioned in the FDR administration. But I'm sure he doesn't mind the fact that Eisenhower bears the name, okay? The other thing I was going to say, I don't have the kind of ties to Missouri that Thomas has, but part of my family lives in St. Louis, and we did before the pandemic drive down every several weeks, and we would cross the Mississippi right by the Arch, and also Busch Stadium, obviously, to... on her way out a little bit further into the city.
Not Cory Bush's stadium, Anheuser-Busch's stadium.
Oh, yes.
Also not President Bush's stadium. We have to clarify which Bush.
Right, yeah. And there's a sidebar trivia that it's my understanding that the overpasses on the interstate highway system are as high as they are so that intercontinental ballistic missiles could go under them on trucks. Okay. Yeah, the interstate highway system actually had... origins in the fact that originally back during, I guess it was the 30s, there were efforts to figure out how would you move people quickly across country. And so it had a kind of military thing, but it also had to do with commerce, obviously. It was not a conspiracy to drain the cities of people by any means. It wasn't that by any means. But in fact, it was the largest, to my knowledge as well, the largest public works project ever pursued in not just American history, but possibly in the world. It may well have been surpassed since then by some massive Chinese enterprise. But and last thing, sorry, I won't go on too long, but the last thing is back in the late 90s, Bill Kristol and David Brooks started asking about American greatness. And they pointed to the interstate highway system and said, they were challenging their own party, can't the Republicans live up to that kind of record?
Yeah. Can I throw one more thing out there, Naomi?
Of course. Yeah.
As long as we're here in pandemic summer and everybody's trying to find things to do in the great out of doors, go to the national park. So I went to Rocky Mountain National Park about a month ago, and there's this amazing road up, you know, built up above tree line up to some of the tall peaks, and you can drive it. And there's also these amazing trails that you can hike that are wide enough so that you could like ride a motorcycle on them if you wanted, all built by a group called the Civilian Conservation Corps. Yep. Back in the great heyday of public works in this country.
You've hit the big three, the CCC, the WPA, and the PWA, all in a short time. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Professor K. And one of the problems with talking to me about this stuff is I will just go down the nostalgia rabbit hole if you don't stop me. I mean, next we'll be talking about the 1890s and then who knows what, Payne, something.
This is why we are on a panel together. I'm so happy I'm in Missouri that it launched this conversation, because this is an aspect I probably wouldn't have brought up. While we're on the topic, I mean, Harvey, you mentioned that there was this other getting people out of the cities. Can we just remind folks like what was the agenda about getting people out of the cities at that
point? In fact, the interstate highway was not built to get people out of the cities. That actually was kind of a left critique, as if that was meant to drain the cities. People left the city. There's a great mythology that the exodus from the city, the original exodus, really had to do with race. And I actually don't buy that terribly. Eventually, I think it has a lot to do with that. But it actually has to do with the fact that during during the war, there was really a great sales pitch on the part of developers and others to portray the post-war dream that GIs had. And the GIs didn't get to see this dream. They're overseas fighting. But the families at home and, in quotes, the women they left behind did. So it was already sort of built into the idea that there was going to be growth, there was going to be expansion, and the place to go would have been out to the suburbs. But of course, the way in which it transpired was solidly built around questions, not only of race, but also of religion. There were neighborhoods up until the Supreme Court decided otherwise, which had covenants that said no Jews allowed. And I'm sure in certain places, no Catholics allowed.
Can I throw something in there, Naomi?
Sure.
I don't know if we're ever going to get to talk about the present day, but in Kansas City, the Black Lives Matter protests took a very interesting turn. They turned against a local developer, a guy called J.C. Nichols, who was extremely influential in the first half of the 20th century and built the neighborhood that I grew up in. And in some ways, and his, you know, he is, his life story is parallel to the story of suburbia, in some ways responsible for single-handedly responsible for segregating Kansas City. But then there's this other weird factor about it, which is he had excellent taste, like really good taste, you know? And so you grow up in these beautiful houses, in these beautiful neighborhoods, and you say, well, this is the most beautiful place in the world. And it is, but all the covenants that Harvey mentioned a second ago, this guy, he's one of the ones who, I don't know if he invented them, but he made them palatable nationally and was able to enforce them long after the Supreme Court said they weren't enforceable. He made that happen. They would have these. Yeah, they would have these. The idea was to achieve segregation without the state. So right. They would do it. They would do it by writing little sort of codicils into the deed of the property that you couldn't sell to certain groups of people. And this was, in some ways, this was his solution. And this man was regarded as a city father of Kansas City, a highly revered figure up until like 3 months ago. And then all of a sudden, everything changed on him. Well, I mean, he's long dead now. He died back in the 1950s, of course. But if you go to Kansas City, you'll see his the sort of jewel in the crown, which is the it's called the Country Club Plaza. These names that they go, the Country Club Plaza. And right down the street, there's a church called Country Club Christian. I am not joking. And
Country Club Christian.
CCC.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a neighborhood in St. Louis where I was Beverly Hills. It was basically Beverly Hills, not Santa Monica, another neighborhood in Los Angeles. It was very strange. Like all the very rich neighborhoods were replicated outside of St. Louis. So I don't know. I mean, it's there's something.
It's actually the other way around. Los Angeles copied us, you know.
Well, that is true, the Missouri side.
I grew up in the Kansas side, but like five blocks
What's
from
the
what
matter
is called
with Kansas.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But five blocks from what is called State Line Road, which is in fact the boundary between Kansas and Missouri. The city is right on the state line. So
I mean, it's obviously we know that suburbia, at least prior to the recent wave of suburbia becoming more diverse, especially in like places like New York, where it's just the cities are so large and they keep growing and people are being displaced. But it's so obvious when you're driving and jarring in a moment like a pandemic, in a moment where the country is as divided as it is, in a moment where I live in a city and I've been in red cities, like, you know, whatever, swing cities, and you know that there are Trump people there. But when you're driving through Pennsylvania, when you're driving through Indiana, when you're driving through Missouri and you see 200 Trump Pence signs and people with their cars, with the flags, and they don't care and people aren't wearing masks and you're in an election, not to mention, you know, 49 days away from election, it's freaking me out a little bit. It's freaking me out because I saw 9 total Biden signs. I know I'm not in the city. I know that white America is really outside of the cities for the most part. I know that's by design. I know that I understand that, but it's freaking me out.
Hey, Naomi, can I tell you something that'll unfreak you very slightly, or maybe it'll make it much worse? So I wrote an article 3 years ago about rural Missouri swinging from blue to red. And blue, this is not all that this, it's all a misnomer, but Missouri was, when Harry Truman was president, Missouri was one of the most Democratic, reliably Democratic states in America. When I was growing up, yeah, Kansas was always Republican and Missouri was always Democratic, and always. And their state, if you ever look up, you know, that saying, I'm from Missouri, you've got to show me, you know, this, if you ever look up where that comes from, it's a Democratic party. It's like some kind of Democratic, you know, it's partisan. You know, I'm a Democrat. I'm from Missouri. You've got to show me. And now Trump, and it went, you know, a few years ago, Missouri was a battleground state. Well, now Trump won every county except for Kansas, where Kansas City is located, where St. Louis is located, and where the University of Missouri is. And much like so many other cities. And it is just absolutely tragic. And I would be reluctant to just blame it on the people. Well, what the hell? I was about to say, I would be reluctant to just blame it on the people who live there and say, well, something's gone wrong with them. Because I don't think that's what it is. You know, you drive in, you're in Springfield. I haven't been there in a long time. But if you go to a lot of sort of medium-sized cities and towns in Missouri, they're disaster zones. You know this. The buildings are like boarded up, and they've been boarded up for 20 years, and these people have no opportunities. It's impossible to get anything going in these towns. If you're a farmer, you're in the grip of this or that monopoly. These people in another time would be enthusiastic about liberalism. You know, and here's where I want to go to Harvey K.
Wisconsin, like Kansas, was historically a Republican state. And I can tell you that we've had some outstanding Democratic politicians like Gaylord Nelson and Russ Feingold. But generally speaking, the Democratic Party in the state has always been pretty much a disappointment, to the point where, as long as we're going to go into the past, in the 1930s, when the progressive Republicans were basically commanding the state, that's the La Follette sons during the 1930s, Bob La Follette Jr., FDR embraced them rather than the Democrats in the state.
Yeah.
And then it did seem, for much of the time I came to Wisconsin in 1978, it seemed for quite a bit of the time that the state was a toss-up at the state level, and that, but it would vote Democratic for president. And then that all changed. Well, not just at the moment that Scott Walker became governor, but you can pretty much link it to the time when the Democrats, after many years, you and I have both written about this, not only abandoned the FDR tradition, they also abandoned the populist tradition utterly. And, you know, listen liberal, right?
Yeah. And, and they won't listen.
So here's a question, though. I mean, we are watching the Biden campaign. News stories have come out. I've been screaming about this since our first show. But news stories have been coming out about how the Biden campaign is not spending their money. They're raising $1 billion. Bernie Sanders is complaining that the Biden campaign is not doing enough to win. The stakes are high, clearly. But Jen O'Malley Dillon, who I served on the Union Reform Commission with, she is the chair, the campaign manager for the campaign. She thinks that door-to-door knocking is not worth it right now. It's not worth the risk, when there are plenty of Democratic candidates across the country who are doing this in an effective way, socially distanced, dropping literature off. And they're saying that they're just about to start the lit drops, just about to do it. They haven't done it yet. We're 49 days from the election. So I think, like, the big question is, are they learning the lesson? I mean, in the face of fascism, number one, to speak to your point, like, they still haven't listened, liberal. And number two, if Biden somehow sneaks by and wins this because of the momentum of the country, because it's a wave year, because of who knows what, even though I'm seeing all these Trump signs, what kind of president is he going to be? Is he really going to be like an FDR? Is he going to be like a Johnson? I'll go to Harvey, because he raised his hand.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that we made a drive across Wisconsin and had the same experience you did. Trump sign, Trump sign, Trump sign. There was a certain irony in what I'm about to tell you, but first I'll tell you what we saw. There were signs that said Medicare for All in the middle of the state, but no Biden signs. And then friends of ours called and asked, how do you get a Biden sign? And we don't have one. And basically speaking, there are no Biden signs available, it seems, in the city of Green Bay. So
can I just add one more point to that? Because this is interesting. They don't have offices. They're not setting up physical offices where people would go and get signs. I passed, literally 5 minutes before I got to this location, I passed a huge Republican office. I assume it's county or city where Trump Pence, everything was out there. And that, I mean, I remember in Iowa, Trump had a fake office. There was a facade, but nothing on the inside. And he lost Iowa, of course. This is in 2016 or 15. But this one was real. You could see in. So if they don't have offices, and if Trump is also, by the way, pulling out of the Rust Belt and moving his money right now to Florida, to Arizona, to Texas, doesn't that concern you too? That he's
Trump is doing that?
His ad buys, his money moved out of Wisconsin.
Why are we
not freaking out?
No, it's the other way around. No, he thinks he's going to lose Wisconsin.
He does. He doesn't
have a chance there. Actually is a good sign. That's a good sign, Nomi.
So, are we sure? I have no idea. We're living in post-fact world.
Wait a minute. Thomas, if we wait a week, it may change.
Yeah, of course. Everything's up in the air. No, that's exactly right. So my take on it would be, Nomi, that I think that Biden, you're right that he's utterly complacent, and he's exhibiting total complacency, just like Hillary before him. There seems to be a tendency among this kind of centrist liberal towards complete and utter complacency. And no, they haven't learned a lesson in that regard. And also reaching out to Republicans as though that's, you know, sort of centrist Republicans, as though that's the real swing voter in America. That's who they need to be worrying about. And I've been saying all along, no, it's those people in rural Missouri. That's who you need to be. And they don't care. They don't want to hear that message. They're not going to hear that message. I think Biden will probably win anyways, just because on the fundamentals, you can't bungle a pandemic like this and hope to get reelected. And I don't see how Trump comes out. What is unemployment now? I mean, it's staggering. People blame the incumbent when these things happen, and it doesn't matter what his excuses are. He's got a lot of excuses. They're more or less idiotic. I'm talking about Trump here. They're more or less idiotic. But I think there's no way he can win this. Now, I could be wrong. Everything can change between now and Election Day. We all know that, as we learned last time around.
Yeah,
the show's about to wrap up. Are you cool sticking around for a little bit?
Yeah,
I can stick around. I don't know about Thomas, but I can stick for a minute.
What else am I going to do?
Hold tight. We're going to do a thing. I'm just going to wrap up the show, and then this is going to be patron release only. So for those of you who are not patrons, this is the time to go to patreon.com/TheNomiKeyShow. But that was our first show on the road in Missouri. Thanks to everybody who tuned in. We are going to be back tomorrow from, I think, Santa Fe, if we can get there in time. We'll be talking about New Mexico on that trip. But tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Here on the Nomi Key Show. Make sure to click like and subscribe and get into that chat, because Harvey K likes to jump in that chat. We know that. And so does this trucker. All right, stick around.